From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 10, recorded Monday, March 13th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications, online at www.automatedqa.com. And by PeterBlum.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at PeterBlum.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks about functional testing tools and utilities.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes, show number 10. Of course, I'm here with Scott Hanselman, and this week we're talking testing tools. Right, Scott?
We are, specifically web testing tools, testing stuff when you make websites.
All right, so basically we have this great sponsor, and we haven't talked about them at all. You know, it's a little weird talking about a sponsor's product, because you don't want to seem like, you know, oh, well, you're just kowtowing to the sponsor. But, you know, this is good stuff, and we took it all for a spin. But you also tried out some other testing tools, so you're going to talk about several, right?
Yeah, Automated QA's Test Complete is cool, but I've just thrown it into a pile with a bunch of other web testing tools like Selenium, IEUnit, Bad Boy, Pestercat, Segway Silk Test, Web Recorder from MJTNet.
All right.
Man, a pile. I mean, there's new stuff coming up from the water team called Firewater. We'll talk about them all.
All right, well, let's get started. What's first?
Well, so I'm a web guy mostly, when I think about doing functional testing over the web, from what I can tell, there is a number of different classes of kind of philosophy about how I'm going to do my testing. There's your HTTP-based test tool, right? Mm-hmm. This is the kind that maybe sets up a proxy. They don't really care what browser you use. They set up a localhost proxy, and then they listen to the HTTP traffic.
Right.
And they'll record it. And
like
then,
a snooper.
Like a snooper. And then they'll do the TiVo thing, and they'll record and playback.
Yeah.
And these things are clever for load testing, right? Because then you can just say, hey, that thing you just did, do it a lot, but now have 20 guys do it.
Mm-hmm.
But for functional testing, it's a little dodgy, because sometimes you want to test JavaScript that you've got in your client side. Sometimes there's complicated interactions that can't really be seen, mm-hmm. When you're just looking at the underlying traffic.
Okay.
So you got your HTTP-based recorders. Then you've got JavaScript object model ones. These are ones that say, well, I want to get basically my browser on a string. I want to be a puppet master, and the JavaScript object model is the best way to do that.
Right.
Those guys are usually cross-platform, cross-browser, because they're using JavaScript to do the real heavy lifting.
Sure.
Then you've got your Win32, what I call your Win32 Spy ++++ type of guys.
Yeah.
This is like real similar to the Automated QA guys, although they also do HTTP-based traffic. This is where you have the tree of all of the windows, not the windows in the, hey, look at all the windows in my taskbar sense of things, but in the, this little button is a window and there's a tree of HWINs, kind of the Win32 way.
Yeah.
That's really useful because you can do both WinForms and WebForms testing. We'll talk about the goods and the bads about that.
Now, I know you're not a big Windows programmer per se, but
not anymore.
Yeah. So you're really going to focus on web testing.
Right. But I want to just kind of cover the philosophies, and some of these tools do Windows-based testing, which you can still use to test your browser.
Okay.
So you can actually still do web testing with this philosophy.
Okay.
So then you've got your payload-based recorders. These are the ones that kind of look at the HTML page and then poke around in the page using their own object model.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll take the HTML and they'll make it look like XML, and you'll do XPath queries on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you'll find an object. Others will look at the payload with regular expressions and say, give me the text box called social security number, or give me the button called go, and mm-hmm. I'll do something with it.
Okay.
The main point of classifying these different things is to call out that an HTTP recorder is not a web recorder.
Okay.
So when someone says, oh yeah, I'm recording traffic and playing it back, well, what exactly? Are you recording button clicks, or are you recording HTTP posts?
Hmm.
So when you're picking a tool, you should really think about that what your goal is and whether that tool meets your needs.
So are you saying that an HTTP recorder is a server-side recorder and a web recorder is client, or what exactly are you saying is the difference between those two?
Are you trying to be a puppet master and control the UI?
Yeah.
Or are you sitting between the browser and the server and watching what goes by?
I see.
Yeah, exactly.
One is a sniffer, one is a controller.
Yeah, absolutely, okay. Absolutely. So there's a really huge list of QA testing products at shrinkster.com/CY8. And some of these tools that I picked came from that list. Certainly, I'm sure we've missed someone. I mean, we're only going to talk about a dozen, half a dozen tools. But, you know, if your really awesome tool is not on this list, I apologize. But
wow,
I picked the ones that I could. Okay?
This is a big list.
Well, yeah, it's hardcore. I mean, there's always someone out there who's got a great tool to do something. But what I wanted to do was pick enough tools that cover this these classes that I've come up with. I mean, this is just something I just made up, right?
Right.
But the HTTP-based, JavaScript object-based, window-based, payload-based, those are the kind of the, from where I see it, the top-level classifications.
Sure.
Okay? Okay, so automated QA...
Yeah,
our sponsor.
Yeah,
has a thing called Test Complete, and they are, I would say, primarily a Windows application tester.
Okay,
but so like WinForms applications, I was able to get a recording and playback of like a calculator test in like 10 minutes. It was pretty easy. You know, you just hook up a test suite, you launch calculator, and you start messing with it, and they record everything that you do. Because they're primarily COM-based, and they're kind of like Spy++. I keep referring to Spy++. This is a tool that comes along with Visual Studio that lets you know the window handle hierarchy of the different things. So they have a number of plugins that you can test WinForms applications. You can get into your .NET objects. They also have wrappers for things like NUnit and stuff. So they really intend to be your complete testing suite for whatever you're doing. So if you've got a bunch of NUnit tests and a WinForms control and you really want to simulate somebody pounding on this thing, doing functional testing, doing load testing, doing whatever, you would use their tool.
Now, I know you're primarily a web guy, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of testing tools out there for Windows applications. Am I right?
Not that I see. I mean, there's your big guys like your Silk Test and different ones like that, but they're expensive and it's kind of complicated because when you're going to go poking around at Windows, you have to ask yourself, am I just going to do WinForms? So am I making a .NET application?
Right.
Or am I going to do any application in Windows that can put out a UI.
Mm.
So the automated QA guys took the window handle approach, which means that they can test anything. They can test Delphi, they can test C++, MFC.
They test finished products.
Yeah, from the outside. But they also do what's called white box testing, where if you know your object has some, like your .NET controls have a static method that you want to poke around and call, you can not only pound on the buttons, but you can also leap inside the application and call methods.
Neat.
So you can do API level stuff as well. Okay, so their tool is $500 without the web stuff for load testing, or $900 for the full kind of enterprise edition.
Okay.
So this kind of prices it outside of the, you know, one or two guy shops, unless that shop does web testing, does hardcore testing.
Right.
Initially, some of the things that kind of turned me off is that while it has, parameter help where you can like see the different, you can see specific help on each parameter. I didn't see a way to turn on IntelliSense.
Okay.
And I'm kind of an IntelliSense addict, and I'm kind of had a little trouble getting through it. But on the web testing side, they take a Windows-based approach. So you basically walk around inside the IE DOM, the IE Document Object Model, and you can look at it two ways. You can look at it via a window or they call it a tree approach, and they have a tag approach. But basically, you write script like, you know, document.all.forms.button.click.
Okay.
Like that.
Do they record scripts as well?
They do record HTTP traffic. So I was able to like load test my blog.
Mm-hmm.
I brought up a browser. It recorded all the traffic. I clicked around in my blog and then I simulated 5 users beating on my blog. That was really easy. So that was doing kind of record and playback because their tool does both HTTP based, window-based and JavaScript object-based. So they're actually doing kind of 3 different kinds of testing of the classes that I listed out.
Right.
All in one tool.
Right.
But getting the getting them to listen to the browser click and do that kind of high-level functional testing is from a recorder point of view, I wasn't able to get working.
Okay.
But for someone who would write that test themselves, like manually, it's pretty straightforward. You can do it in Delphi, in VB.net, in C Sharp, in whatever you want. They've got, like, have language plugins.
Okay.
And, that was pretty straightforward. It looks a lot like Segway Silk Test.
Okay.
Segway Silk Test is way more expensive. It's $5,000 plus. Segway Silk Test is pretty hardcore. It's kind of like, if you need to ask how much it is, then you probably don't need it.
Right.
Because I went up on their site, and we own Silk Test here at Corellian. I went up on their site and looked at how much it cost, and it said, if you'd like to buy, give us a call, and we'll hook you up with one of our sales professionals.
Now, is that Mercury?
Okay, so Mercury Windrunner is from, I believe it's from Rational, and that's another tool.
That's something else.
That's something else from shrinkster.com/CYC. These are the kind of the Bentley and Mercedes of testing tools, where an enterprise decides that they're going to standardize on this at that, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars as an enterprise.
Okay.
Silk Test is kind of like, has a Pascal-like language called Fortest, while the automated QA guys give you the choice of like five different languages. And you can pick up Segway Silk Test at shrinkster.com/CYL.
And I think you said that both of these programs are very expensive.
Well, I would say that Silk Test and Mercury are definitely in the several grand per person kind of a world. So if you're looking at like a Windrunner, or if you're looking at Segway Silk Test, take a look at Automated QA's Test Complete. You're going to get very, very similar benefits for probably half or a fifth of the cost.
Yeah, it looks like
definitely
a fifth.
A lot cheaper. Yeah.
Even at their most expensive. Yeah.
Yeah, so the commitment to this to any testing product, right, is that you're going to basically put all of your eggs in this testing product's basket. One of the things I liked about the Test Complete is that they'll call in unit tests. They'll use some of the existing resources that you have. So if you had a really complicated application that had both WinForms and web UI, mm-hmm. that would be the kind of thing you'd want to look at.
Cool.
So other web testing tools that are way cheaper, and as such, of course, you get a lot less benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Another one's called SW Explorer Automation from Alex Furman, and that's at shrinkster.com/CYE. This is a tool that we kind of go back and forth here at Corellian about. I'm personally a WATIR fan, WATIR, Web Application Testing in Ruby. We'll talk about that in a second. But one of our QA leads here, Brent Strange, is a fan of the SW Explorer Automation because it generates in some way C-sharp code. Or VB.net code.
In some way. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So this is an interesting tool. He's got a recorder, right? So you go into his application, you say record, and then he watches you actually click on the page. But what you do is you create what's called a scene. So you say, on this page, I am interested in these things. Because on a particular page, you may not be interested in every aspect of the page, just a few controls.
Sure.
So you right-click on the controls, and you say, I want this, this, and this in my scene. So you set up these scenes, and then you can refer to them in the scene as like a simpler name than what they were.
Okay.
And then he saves out these scene files in a form of an XML file. This XML file internally has an XPath that basically plucks that control out. So when you were clicking on the control and setting the scene, he was keeping track of this depth, this path, within your HTML application.
Cool.
And then when you generate the code, he gives you a collection of these objects that you were interested in the scene, and then you just pull them out of a hash table.
Okay.
So good things
That's
about that
cool.
is that, yeah, it's pretty straightforward to use. It's easy to record. Bad things are that if he does tie your testing code a little bit to your site's structure.
Yeah.
So if you move something around, if a button comes out of a text box, you have to go back and then reset the stage, basically.
I see.
Go re-record the scene. You don't have to re-record your scripts. You just have to change this mapping file.
That's one of the things I like about Visual Studio that we sometimes take for granted is how it, especially 2005, how it remembers things and changes things when you change them.
Yeah, it would be nice if there was a better, more deterministic way for him to find these controls.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is very clever. I mean, he grabs what you're doing in IE and he creates these mapping tools, and then that makes your scripts very simple.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't spend time in your script digging around for controls.
Mm-hmm.
You spend the time doing what you want to do. But again, tying it to the structure of the underlying document seemed a little interesting. When I said that he generates this code, kind of, what he's generating is C-sharp code that calls his underlying automation stuff. So he's not generating C-sharp code that talks to IE. He'll generate code that calls SW Explorer Automation dot navigate.
I see.
Rather than IE.navigate. But then once you're in there, you just say things like scene, and then you pull out the object that you want. Interestingly also, rather than picking existing objects like HTML text area from ASP or pulling them out of IE or any of the other places that have defined these, he's got his own controls collection. So he really has a complete wrapper around IE, and then he'll generate this code for you that to modify, and you can poke around within his object model on top of IE.
That's very cool.
And that's up at shrinkster.com/CYE, and that's $59. Pretty interesting. Mostly a recorder, but he gives you a pretty rich object model. So with any recorder, you're not going to do your complete testing only in the recorder, right? The recorder is just going to get you 80% of the way there, and you're going to jumpstart your testing.
Okay.
So stepping over to a competitor, there's one called Bad Boy at shrinkster.com/CYJ. This is an Australian company that has a very similar product that does recording as well. SWE Explorer Automation will put IE on a string and basically launch that process and then tile your windows so he's on the left and IE's on the right.
Oh, cool.
Bad Boy will put the browser inside, and this is a real easy way to do your automation. Basically, sticking the IE user control inside. Now, Bad Boy is kind of a, it's free, but it kind of walks the line between an HTTP recorder and an object model recorder. He's watching the traffic as you move around and keeping track of requests and sub-requests and then parameterizing them. So then you can go back in and say, well, I like that request, except this sub-request here where I called out to this iframe. I don't want to do that anymore. Or I want to change this. And then he'll keep track of all the assertions, the warnings, the timings. He does lots of charting and graphing. You know, for a free tool, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, okay.
Now, a very similar tool that has a little more functionality, in my opinion, is from the guys at mjtnet.com. They've got a tool called Web Recorder, shrinkster.com/CYK. And this is a showcase recorder that's actually separated from their playback. So basically the recorder creates scripts in their scripting kind of VB language that then is run through their macro recorder. So they have a generic macro recorder that can do other things. It appears the MJTNet guys are not just going for the testing market, but also the automation market. If you're someone who wants to do screen scraping, you could use their tool to suck data off of the net. Now, one of the things that's really cool is that they've taken, that idea, like the water maker that I did a while back, which was a recorder, a poor man's recorder that would basically make water scripts.
Right.
They took their recorder technology and out of the kindness of their hearts released a water web recorder at shrinkster.com/CYD. This uses their web recorder technology, but records Ruby water scripts for you, gets you jump started on water, and is really already much more functional than my existing tool.
Now, I know you've talked about Ruby quite a few times now, and what's so great about Ruby that C-sharp can't do or VBNet can't do? What is so cool about it?
It's hard to express. It's so elegant and elegant and not in a C or C++ kind of terse way. Like some people will look at C and they'll say, wow, that's really elegant. It's so terse. Ruby has that kind of feel of VB in the sense that it's not hiding meaning in symbols like C-sharp does or C++ does, but it's avoiding unnecessary, it's avoiding unnecessary, words, I guess. It's kind of hard to say. It's like when you hear someone like if you read Hemingway, you go, wow, that was a really tight sentence. He just said it all. And I really can't, like, see how I'm struggling right now to say this correctly. That's kind of what Ruby is like.
It's succinct, maybe is what you would say.
Yeah, it's succinct. It's smooth. It's elegant. It feels lightweight.
Now, do you like this for just scripting, or would you like to see this as a you know, the next language, the next big language. I mean, for everything.
Yeah, I think, well, no, I think it may be the next big language. Like I pointed to John Lamb's blog
right.
and how he's building that Ruby CLR bridge. Definitely Ruby is going to be around for a while. I think it'll fill a place like Python did.
And is it what I'm getting at is, do you think it's going to be a good general language, or is it going to be specific to web or Windows apps or any particular kind of apps?
I think that because Ruby on Rails, their web-based, basically the ASP.NET of Ruby, is called Rails.
Yeah.
So Ruby is Ruby. It's a scripting language, and you can do whatever you want to with it. You can write command line applications. Ruby on Rails lets you do things like object relational mapping and object persistence in really very elegant ways. You can write a blog and, you know, 20,000 lines of code, that kind of thing.
So your answer is, you still have it. Is it general? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I mean, I don't have to tell you, man. It's general until it's not general.
All right.
Is C-sharp general?
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
C-sharp is general to me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's general in that, yes, you can do anything you want to with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one said, oh, wow, I totally couldn't do that in Ruby.
Okay. And you think more VB programmers or C-sharp programmers would like Ruby? I mean, who does it feel better to?
You know, that's a very good point. Just like I was saying before, that it has a VB style about it in that it doesn't use a whole lot of funky symbols.
Yeah.
But it has all the kind of powerful OO as well as some things that C-sharp doesn't quite do yet.
Okay.
So I think that it's a really good compromise. I mean, if C-sharp programmers and VB.NET programmers could really bury the hatchet, they would do it over a language like Ruby.
Okay. Enough of that. Let's move on.
Well, and this actually moves us on to a nice place, which is to to water.
Okay.
So water, web application testing in Ruby, is basically an IE wrapper. It's a wrapper around Internet Explorer's COM interface that lets Ruby talk to IE in a very clean and elegant way. And I like it because you can literally just sit down and start working and you're productive immediately. I like it because you can show someone something in Ruby and water and say, oh, it's like this. And they'll go, oh, wow. And you don't even need to teach them the language. Anyone who knows how to code at all goes, oh, okay, here's how you do an if.
Mm.
You know, so literally you sit down and you go IE.new, IE.goto, you know, and that's like how you do it.
Okay.
IE.textField. And you grab a text field and you go dot set value and then you're moving yourself along. It's that easy.
Okay.
So, for really simple functional testing that you want to just work, you want it to be free, and you're willing to learn another language, it's cool. Sure, could you use C-sharp for this? Absolutely. You could use VB.NET. You could go into Visual Studio. You could say add web reference and start poking around at IE.
Okay.
Except the IE DOM, right, the document object model for IE, is complicated.
Yes.
And you find yourself poking around documents.all.forms. Blah, 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 blah,
right?
Right? With water, they've basically flattened, when appropriate, the DOM. So you can go IE.textField, and then this is the cool part. You can say, I want this text field by name, or I want it by index. It's
that's
the fifth
cool.
one, or that, by whatever, you know.
That's cool. You don't always, you know, you can't always remember where what the hierarchy is, and seldom does it matter.
Yeah, and the other nice thing is that because Ruby has regular expressions just as a construct there all the time, you can just pass in a regular expression into water and say, give me the one that ends with foo.
Right.
And it'll just figure it out. And ordinarily, you'd be writing code in C-sharp or VB.NET to run around looking for that thing. They've hidden all that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the cool part, because people always say, oh, well, that's IE only, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's some rumblings going on, and with all cool named products like Water, WATIR, there are cool named sub-projects. There's a thing called Firewater. Coming soon. You could see that one coming down Broadway.
Yeah.
Shrinkster.com/CYF. And then here's a little known secret in that you won't find it on Google yet. Shrinkster.com/CYG. This is the actual Subversion repository. And I've sent you the link to the specific Firefox 0.01 branch within the water repository.
So let's back up. Firewater is Firefox water. Right.
Yeah, so what they've done is so clever. He's built a Firefox extension that then Ruby will call.
Wow.
But you would just keep using water the way you're comfortable with using water.
I see.
It's I'm sure it's going to be very cool. And once you have a nice tight recorder, which I think that we are getting there with shrinkster.com/CYD, the water web recorder, which jump starts things. And I want to make it clear that the water team is not a fan of recorders.
Yeah.
Okay. They've said that publicly. I like recorders because they jumpstart the work, but understand that they'll get you 80%. You have to stop, hit save, and then edit from there afterwards. And then if you've got cross browser support, at least on IE and Firefox, you've got a really nice tool.
Okay.
And then of course, Travis Illig and Dustin Woodhouse, both of my buddies here at Carillion, have written wrappers around water to allow NUnit to talk to those things.
Okay.
And if you can check my blog for those things. So those are the that's free. Water's free. And again, it is free like a puppy, right?
Sure.
So there, you know, our guys here, they struggle with it sometimes. They start getting into, well, I seem to be copy-pasting code a lot. How can I use OO to solve that problem? You know, these are the kinds of things that you just have to stumble with, and that's the hidden cost.
Now, what is PesterCat?
So PesterCat is a Java-based proxy-based tool for $27 at shrinkster.com/CYB that will do web testing. And it will work on OS X, Mac, Windows, or Linux.
Hmm.
And also has a toolkit that will let you plug it into Ant, which is the, like you're familiar with NAnt.
Yeah.
This is Ant on the...
automated builds.
Automated builds, exactly. Yeah. And this is another really nice tool that will also do not just gets and posts and things like that, but also regex validation of gets and posts. So you can put your asserts in like that, as well as some SQL type stuff. So if you're a LAMP type individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're Linux, Apache, MySQL, Perl, then
LAMP. Yeah.
LAMP, right? The LAMP stack.
Right.
Then something like PesterCat would be a really straightforward thing that you'd be familiar with right away. But then I would ask you to look at Ruby, because that's something that works cross-platform, although Water is still specifically Windows.
Okay.
So Water is still Windows because it's talking to the IE stuff, but you know the potential for Ruby to really become a great general scripting language is going to be pretty powerful.
Okay.
So IE-specific seems to be kind of the way things go, because the object model on top of IE is so nice.
Right.
And the flexibility is there. There's another tool called IEUnit, shrinkster.com/CYA, which is not just about the JavaScript object model, but also takes advantage of cscript.exe, right? The script runner that comes with Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's implemented entirely in JavaScript, but it is tailored specifically to Windows. So it's using the IE DHTML model. So it's poking at the browser using the browser's, you know, using jscript.dll, the JavaScript engine. So the installation is trivial. It's just, you know, x copy deploy, and it allows you also to use all the new JavaScript object oriented stuff to extend it.
Yeah.
This is a pretty cool tool, and I looked at this before we started getting into Water, but I haven't seen anything moving on this since October of last year. And I really like the idea of whatever testing tool I'm going to buy, I want to know that it's being actively thought about, it's being worked on, and that people care about it.
Right.
So I'm not really clear if IUnit is paused or what's going on there. Still, something interesting to watch. And if you're going to be, if you like JavaScript and you're not interested in learning something like Ruby, then definitely something that you might want to take a look at.
Okay.
Now, on the JavaScript side, Selenium is the one that people always compare to Ruby. Not because it has anything to do with Ruby or looks anything like Ruby, but when people say, I want a free functional web-based tool for testing,
yeah,
and I want it to be easy, Selenium is just about as easy as it could get. But it's really, for the average Windows guy, presumably you and I are the average Windows guys, it's really weird.
Mm.
The input into them, the input that you would say, what do you write your tests in, is HTML tables.
Huh?
You write your tests as HTML tables. So you would make like a table, like in any HTML editor. You could write it in, you know, Mozilla Composer or Front Page, and you'd have three columns. And then the first column, you'd say open. Second column, you'd say the page you want to open. And then the third column would be for other parameters you'd pass in. Open only has the one. So then on the next line, the next row in the table, you might say something like verify text present. So that left column, that first column, are the functions you're going to be calling in the toolkit. So you're saying like open this to, you know, open franklins.net, next line, verify element present, Carl Franklin, or whatever, verify text present. And then you could say click and wait, verify location. All these kinds of verbs appear in that left side, and then the other two columns become input. Now, what's cool about this is that non-technical people can do this.
Okay.
And you might, like HTML tables.
Well, yeah.
Right? They could open it up. You could give this to your business guy. He could open it up into front page.
Yeah.
And you could just say, well, here's a list of things that you could do. And you just basically give him a text file that says, here's what you can do.
Make a table.
Make a table and write the things in the order that you want.
Okay.
Then when they run them, the running actually occurs in the browser. So the browser's doing the work. So open up a browser and go to that URL that I just sent you. This is a really interesting tool. The test runner you can see at shrinkster.com/CYN. And then on the right side there, it says execute test. This is all running in the browser. Just say, you know, run all. You can also walk through them. And you'll watch that it's actually using JavaScript to look at those tables and then do the work. And it's running your site in a frame below.
Now, there's a test demo here that we could shrinksterize and tell people about.
So again, you can take a look at the demo of that at shrinkster.com/CYN and look at the homepage for Selenium at shrinkster.com/CY9.
Okay, cool.
Now, I got to tell you, I go back and forth because there's some really neat stuff you can do in Ruby, some very specific kinds of testing. But for really simple kind of acceptance testing, if you didn't have enough testers, but you had a lot of, you know, business people who know what they want and could be given some kind of test philosophy.
Yeah.
There's really something to be said for Selenium. Now,
okay.
Because it's written entirely in JavaScript, it really works anywhere. But you can't do, like, I couldn't write a test for google.com because I don't own their domain.
Oh.
So you do have to install this on your server side.
Ah.
And then, because you don't want it, because the JavaScript has to come from the same location as with the thing you're going to test.
That's right.
Otherwise, you've got some cross-browser things. But there's also Selenium drivers being written. So there's two ways you can do this. It can run in the browser, or it could be driven by Ruby or C# or whatever kind of driver application is currently being used.
Okay.
But like I'm running this right now inside of Firefox, and it's pretty amazing. If you're not doing functional testing, sit down and write one of these tests and get it working on maybe your blog or something simple. And I really think that you'll be amazed at how simple functional testing has really become.
No.
And then, I'm sorry, another thing I wanted to point out was that a really great guide to why Ruby is cool is at shrinkster.com/CYM. It's called Poignant's Guide to Ruby. It's a weird little cartoony, he's got like cartoon foxes and stuff. So it's kind of obscure. But download the PDF and read it, and it'll tell you why he thinks. It's kind of like Rory wrote it. If Rory wrote a guideline on Ruby, it would be this guy's poignant guide to Ruby. It's pretty cool stuff.
Good. And now Visual Studio Team System has some testing stuff built into it as well.
It does. I haven't looked at any of the testing stuff short of how it does unit testing.
Right.
Like, you know, it's a Visual Studio Team System as a replacement for NUnit.
Okay.
Have you looked at it? Does it do web-based testing?
No, I haven't. I mean, last I interviewed somebody, when I talked to the team, they said it did have a web testing tool, but there wasn't a Windows testing tool.
So is it a Visual Studio Team System load testing tool? Does it
do
load?
Yeah, I haven't used it myself, but from what I understand, it's a web testing tool, and that's about all I know.
See, here we'll put it out into the world. And
yeah,
they'll let us know. I suspect it's probably the Application Center test on steroids?
Probably.
But I don't know if it's functional web testing. I have not seen that. If I had, I probably would be using it.
We'll leave it up to an alert listener to send us the skinny on that. We can talk about it next week.
Absolutely.
So there's another product out there, Scott, by Redgate called Ants. Does that fall into the category of web testing?
So there's Ants Load. The Redgate software has got a series of products called the Ants Profiler, Ants Load. Ants Load is a load testing application. So like using SegWay, there's like SegWay Silk Performer and SegWay Silk Test.
Mm-hmm.
Those are calling out a functional test tool versus a a load testing tool.
Okay.
Ants load is more of a, I want to beat on that web server as hard as I can and see if the application falls over.
I see. Okay. Good. So they really don't belong in the functional testing category.
Yeah. If today what we're talking about is functional testing, then no.
Okay. That's a pretty good wrap up there, Scott.
Yeah. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there and, you know, varying in prices from, get a second mortgage to free and waste a lot of time. We've found at Carilion a nice balance. For our large load testing, we use Segway and we paid a lot for it. And for our functional testing, we use water and we continue to watch Selenium. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what I want to use to test DOSBlog. I know that we need a unit testing framework and it's going to be probably, because we're an open source project and we're free, either Selenium or water.
And it sounds like if you want to test Windows applications, you really ought to look at Test Complete.
Yeah, automated QA test complete for WinForms application, for Windows apps, any kind of existing COM application, pretty hardcore. You could also look at the stuff from Mercury or from Segway, but I think you're going to spend a lot more money.
Right. Okay, good. So what else besides testing has been on your mind this week, Scott?
Well, people keep sending me links to orb.com. It's this home entertainment application, not quite media center, wants to be media center thing.
Yeah.
It seems to be that kind of the meme that's moving around the net right now. Like, hey, Warp's cool.
People trying to do remote TV.
And, you know, we need to do a talk on, we'll do a talk. Let's do this. Let's do a show on poor man's media centers because there are at least a dozen. And it's like any excuse to not use Windows Media Center. People will come up with there's Java-based tools, and there's Beyond TV from Snapstream, and there's...
I feel like I know more about those things just from listening to you talk on the previous shows than I've ever wanted to know.
Yeah, frankly, I spent years trying to figure out what I was going to use to record TV. A large part of my life will never be gotten back because I spent time screwing around with the ATI all in Blender, trying to get it to work on my system. I've got I was going to say hopage, but I remembered last time that someone told me it was pronounced hophog.
Whatever.
The hophog card that I've got, my $50 cheapo card. It was $50. I can pronounce it how I want to. The hophog card that I've got just plugs right into Beyond TV.
Yeah.
Which is really inexpensive. Now, people are saying to look at Orb because it does transcoding. So basically, I could be at a hotel, log into my machine at home by punching a hole in the firewall, and it will transcode my shows and send them to me.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though.
And stream them, right?
And stream them to me.
It's not just downloading.
Yeah. So it'll basically say, well, I've got a giant file. It's 2 gigs, but I've got low bandwidth here. Stream it to me at 256K.
Yeah.
And Orb does that, and people are excited about it because apparently it's easy to set up. But Beyond TV has done that for a couple of years. I've been going to hotels on trips, going to Tech Ed and watching TV via my Beyond TV or Beyond TV link stuff from Snapstream. So maybe a listener can tell me why Orb is cooler than that, or maybe they didn't realize that Beyond TV already does that.
Okay.
So that was an interesting thing, though. But people keep saying, take a look at Orb, take a look at Orb. It also seems like if you put Orb on a Media Center PC, Orb does the recording and the Media Center P doesn't.
Huh.
And that seemed a little disturbing to me. It was cool that Orb would create files in the Media Center PC format, but I don't know what I think about having another service that's not the Media Center doing the recording for me.
How's that different from Slingbox?
Okay, so Slingbox, if I understand correctly, just looks at your media and quote unquote slings it around. It is basically a hardware transcoder.
I see.
It's a piece of hardware that will throw your stuff around to wherever you want.
And from what I understand with Slingbox, it's not like it plugs in and you can have multiple people's, you know, stealing cable off your box. Basically, you have to, nobody can watch another channel while you're watching it remotely. In other words, it's definitely a single user remote viewer for your whatever's coming off your cable box.
Yeah, well, Slingbox apparently supports DVR, satellite boxes, DVDs. I mean, it's less about being a PC, and Slingbox is more about capturing.
I see.
Your existing media, not your media center, but your existing entertainment center's
whatever that is
content and storing it off somewhere, so then you can look at it elsewhere.
Okay.
So I think Slingbox would be the kind of thing that I would recommend to my dad.
Yeah.
Because it would plug in, it would work, he wouldn't have to think about it. It is an appliance.
Okay.
While all of these different tools that we'll talk about in a future show about Media Center PCs all require a PC. I don't get the impression that that other than the Sling player, which is the thing that you would use to watch your shows,
yeah,
you don't require a whole system to use a Slingbox.
On that future show, perhaps we should wait till something really cool comes out.
Yeah, I need to get myself one of these high-def TiVos that you're talking about, the six tuners or something.
Yeah, right.
And apparently Sony's also got a very expensive and complicated thing called location-free TV. Hmm. I noticed that when I recently upgraded my PSP, my PlayStation Portable, I now have built-in location-free TV. So this is kind of Sony's Slingbox.
Okay.
Except it's, and they've got it up at Fry's, and people walk past it and don't care.
Got a URL for that?
Yeah, that is up at shrinkster.com/CYH. This is a Sony kind of a Slingbox. And then they've got pictures on their little flash demo of people holding not quite origami looking devices and sitting in their lounge chairs watching television.
I see.
And of course, with your PSP, you'd be able to watch it as well. Personally, I'd much rather avoid streaming this stuff around, and I would just copy it to my PSP and watch it anywhere I want to.
Yeah, really. What's now that DVD media are so cheap, you know, now they've become, you know, lower class or, you know, too lowbrow for us.
Well, this is the thing, you know, I was explaining to my 80-year-old uncle the concept of Sneakernet, because he's got a dial-up connection and I wanted to back up his computer. So I went over there this weekend with I was going to take over a USB key, but I didn't have one.
Right.
So I took my camera. I took my camera with 2 gigs. I plugged in my digital camera and I backed up his whole computer. And
great.
I said, what am I? He said, what are you doing here? You know, why couldn't I just email it to you? And I said, well, you know, it's FedEx is faster than your dial up. You know, I could overnight this thing and it would come to me faster than you could upload it.
Yeah.
So I was saying, well, it's great that we have location free TV and we're streaming media around and whatnot, but it's just as easy if I really want to watch the show to burn it to a DVD and put it in my bag.
Right.
How many times have you gotten to a hotel and they have a crap connection?
All right. I know.
Or, you know, you can't count on the wireless
at
Starbucks to get you the Winter Olympics. I'm just going to burn them to a disc and I'll take them with me.
Yep, exactly.
So there's something to be said for Sneakernet.
I agree. So you got one more thing on the list here that you want to talk about. Halo Zero.
Oh, this is the coolest, man. I love this. This is a 2D side scroller, quote unquote, port of Halo. So it's a side-scroller Halo. It's like, remember, like, you ever played Contra or, you know, R-Type, those kind of like classic 320 by 240 big pixel?
Yeah.
This is absolutely fantastic. It's at shrinkster.com/CYI, and it is brilliant. You might have to struggle with the download. It's very popular.
All right. So let me ask, did they start with the actual Halo environment?
No.
Or is it completely redone?
This is just as if Halo is a comic book.
All right, so it's brand new. They didn't use any of the bits from Halo.
No. This is an homage.
I gotcha.
To be French, of what they're doing.
That's cool.
It's fantastic. Here's the link. Take a look at that, Carl. It reminds me a lot of like Contra or, you know, Super Mario. It's got that kind of classic, crisp 2D shaded 2D sprite style. It's a blast to play. They use the same heads-up display as Halo.
Yeah.
And the graphics are really very nice. It's a really fun game, and I don't know why it's free.
I love those horizontal play.
Oh yeah,
games.
They've even got a level editor now, so you can make your own levels.
That's great.
Fantastic stuff.
So Scott, I guess that's a show. What are we going to talk about next week?
I think next week we're going to talk about the new Microsoft Command Shell, codename Monad.
Oh, cool.
This is like the new DOS prompt for Windows, and I am absolutely loving it. I'm in love with this thing. Kevin Hill turned me on to this thing. I had looked at it before. I'd said, this is too complicated. And then one day I needed it, and I started poking around, and it is absolutely fantastic.
All right.
It's the way that we're going, and you got to check it out. And then I think maybe the week after that we'll talk about a little bit more about micro formats. Micro formats are, well, that'll be a show then, won't it? So I won't even start.
We just won't even start. All right, Scott, thanks a lot. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.